my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of a podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
But you're not going to be saved by this bell. Established in 2016, Stride Pro Wrestling trainers have put their years of experience to help train the next generation of professional wrestlers. Nearly a dozen students have graduated and are now making a name for themselves, not only here at Stride Pro Wrestling, but beyond. Our athletes aren't locked into any long-term contracts. So if you want to train, use your head and contact Stride Pro Wrestling today. It's training you'll flip for. So kick your future into high gear now.
Hey everyone, welcome to My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast. This is Kevin Huntsberger, and we're kind of flipping the script a little. Usually the fourth Monday of the month, we do Wrestling with the 80s or Wrestling with the 90s. We're going to do it this week because I have a special guest, and we wanted to talk about a couple of different things, and so we're kind of lumping it all in under the Wrestling with the 90s. We could technically go with the 80s as well, but we'll get to the guest in just a couple of minutes. First, though, I do want to talk about Chad Smart, my buddy Chad Smart, who is the founder of the Positive Cynicism Podcasting Network. He had myself and Travis Yates on, and I'm not sure when the show is dropping. It may have already dropped as I'm recording this, but we were talking about guilty pleasures in professional wrestling. So I appreciate the opportunity to talk to Chad and Travis. Popology 101 is the name of that podcast on the Positive Cynicism Podcasting Network. I'll have a link on my Twitter and Facebook page, too. You can check those out. But I also want to talk about Stride Pro Wrestling and my guest, who is the reigning Stride Pro Wrestling No Limits Champion. He is Bo Sawyer. And Bo, big title defense coming up. If folks are listening this week, it is coming up on Saturday, March 14th, the four-year anniversary of Stride Pro Wrestling. It is Stride-iversary. Bo, welcome back to My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast.
Well, Kevin, thank you very much for having me back. It's been a minute.
Well, the last time we talked, you know, you were part of the tag team, the Midwest Monster Hunters, and actually it was a year ago at Strideiversary 3 that Jason Tiller turned on you, who was your tag team partner, and he has since kind of faded away from Stride Pro Wrestling, and you're going out on your own as a singles. You and Jason, of course, won the tag team titles, but now you winning your first singles belt in Stride. Tell me a little bit about the transition of going from a tag team wrestler now into a singles wrestler and a champion, and coming up against Dexter Roswell, who is a little bit off his rocker, as fans in Stride have seen.
Well, you know, a little bit off his rocker is completely an understatement. And I mean, for the past 9 months, Dexter has been on my case and has had either some kind of weird obsession, or he's just, you know, slowly slipping off that little bit of grasp of reality. But, you know, to get back to what you had asked at first, to transition from a tag team wrestler to a singles wrestler, when you're in a tag team, and especially, you know, with Tiller and I, we were close, and even to put this over, we were two-time Stride Pro Wrestling tag team champions. And, you know, when you're in a tag team, you can always have that other person to rely on, or, you know, they've got your back. And, you know, with Tiller, I don't know what happened. Something just snapped one day, and, you know, at Strideiversary last year, I had a shot to come out for the Legacy Cup. And next thing you know, boom, I get plumbed from behind, and I'm left laying, and I miss the shot. And, you know, Tiller and I we were going to meet head-to-head one way or another, and then he just kind of faded off.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, that's a page in a book that hasn't been written, and who knows if that's going to happen. Like, I still want to see what the end of that story is going to be.
Yeah.
And hopefully one of these days we'll find out. But until then, you know, I'm dealing with another nut in Dexter Roswell. And let's say whether he's Dexter Roswell, whether he's Luke Chambers, or who, you know, whoever, what incarnation of Dexter Roswell we're going to get, you know, Democrat, Republican, it doesn't matter. It's all crazy. And it's going to come to a head coming up at Strideversary.
So now you are really the second time, second person rather, to hold the new No Limits Championship. Of course, Cash Borden kind of stole the show. And you're going to have to refresh my memory, because the night of that show where we introduced the No Limits Championship, I was a bundle of nerves, because that's the night that Heath Hatton and I were facing off against the Sin City Saints for the tag team title. So I watched that opening match, the ladder match for the No Limits Championship. I don't recall, though, were you able to be a part of that match, that big, I think it was a 7 or 8 man ladder match for the belt?
Right, there was a lot of people in that match, and yes, I was actually in that match. And unfortunately, when Cash Borden ran out and pretty much stole the No Limits Championship, poor Scott Phoenix was the one who took the absolute worst out of that, because if you recall, Scott ended up with a separated shoulder, I believe.
I think he broke his collarbone,
Broke his collarbone, that's right.
Yeah.
It was something like something upper region.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I put him on the shelf for a bit. And it was a shame, and especially with Cash not even being in the match, and then just ran up, jacked the belt, and I remember taking off after him, and he just kind of faded off into the crowd.
Now, was that kind of sweet revenge then? Because, well, it wasn't maybe about 6 weeks later, if even that long, the next show, actually, I believe we were in Centralia, which was Cash's hometown. You got a little bit of revenge in a fatal four-way where you then capture the No Limits Championship. Did you feel a little vindication with that?
You know, I did, and I felt I did the title a little bit better justice, because instead of it actually being stolen, I actually pinned somebody's shoulders to the mat in a fatal four-way to actually win it that way. So it was the right way to go about it, and, you know, let's put it this way. Cash wasn't the guy I pinned, but at the same time, he lost a lot that night.
Yeah.
Because he also lost the Legacy Championship, and I'm pretty sure he lost the Heavyweight Championship back to Red Daniels that night.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, as we speak of Cash Borden, and you mentioned Red Daniels too, those two men are going to be in a triple threat match against Axe Allward for the Stride Pro Wrestling Heavyweight Championship. But, you know, obviously, Bo, you are one of the biggest guys on the Stride roster. You know, as JR would say, tougher than a $2 steak. Dexter Roswell, $1.70 maybe, and obviously a much different wrestler than, and probably what you've seen in other places that you've wrestled, and we'll talk about that in just a second. But how do you prepare, as we mentioned earlier, the mental instability of a Dexter Roswell? Even though you are obviously the bigger dog in this fight, how do you prepare for someone like that? Because he is so crafty and cunning, and as we've seen in the past, will literally do anything to win.
Yeah, very much so. It's hard to prepare for crazy, but at the same time, you have to expect the unexpected. You have to be ready for absolutely anything. And see, Dexter is the reason there's a finishing move I've been using as of late called the World Breaker. It's a gigantic crucifix power slam, and he is the reason for the birth of that move, because I had to dig deep somewhere to get the absolute most impact out of a power slam that I could. And that was what I had, you know, come up, I had schemed in my head and thought, it's like, how can I, you know, because I'm a huge fan of the power slam, and you know, obviously the British Bulldog being my number one wrestler of all time, I had to take that and modify it and make it something new, something bigger, something very much impactful that I know nobody's going to get up from. And he is the reason because of that, because I had to dig so deep, because let's face it, crazy is crazy, and when you have to put crazy down, you have to go big.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, obviously, we know you're a part of Stride and have been for a couple of years, and obviously, you have wrestled for years before coming to Stride, and you actually wrestle for a handful of other promotions in Indiana and here in Southern Illinois as well. So, tell me a little bit about some of the other companies that you wrestle for and the championships you've won along the way.
Well, I wrestled for IWAU over in Noble, Illinois, which they actually had started over on Olney, Illinois. And they're the people, you know, with Josh Totten and he is the Intimidator. I almost called him the Intimidator, you know, somebody else. But Homicidal Stephen Davis are my two original trainers, and I've been with them since, you know, pretty much day one.
Okay.
And, you know, we wrestle over there. It's every Tuesday, and usually once a month we'll have a big show on our Fridays. But I have won, you know, almost every title there except that big one.
Mm-hmm.
Still going after that, not going to lie. And also I wrestle for a company in Vincennes, Indiana called Tri-State Wrestling, where I get to get cocky and I get to toot my own horn on this, because as of today marks 648 days that I have been heavyweight champion.
Wow. That's impressive.
And I'm pretty happy with that. And there's a list of people, you know, anywhere from Joey O'Reilly to Sam Knight, Frank Wyatt. I mean, you name, and Riser, even, you know,
yeah.
From Stride.
Yeah.
I mean, great kid, but I've luckily had one hell of a reign on this. And who knows how far we're going to go. But I've got it, and I want to keep it, and we're going to see how far I'm going to take it.
And before we get into our main topic, I also want to talk to you about YouTube, because you are one of the guys out there who, I've always kind of said this, you know, with professional wrestling, you have to, we've seen it with guys like Colt Cabana, Zack Ryder, and now on a bigger scale, now that everybody kind of has this platform for podcasting, more guys are getting into this, but you are one of those guys on the indie scene who is out there very consistent with your branding and with YouTube, and you've kind of transitioned. You know, the Midwest Monster Hunter, Bo Sawyer, and now you're the American War Dog. Talk to me a little bit about the transitions of characters, but also the importance, and plug your YouTube channel as well.
Okay, well, the difference going in from the Midwest Monster Hunter is it was more of a group type thing. And, you know, that comes off the tag team with Tiller, and then also that I have tagged with Blaine Black elsewhere. And pretty much going from that, it's, like I said, usually it's a group effort on that part of it. And transition, the American War Dog is my singles. As a singles competitor, it's more of taking the people that I've looked to or looked up to from the past growing up and combining it all into one big ball and putting my own unique kind of spin on it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's taking, you know, from the tag team from the Road Warriors, and that's also taking very much from, you know, the British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith, and just kind of letting my mind flow and doing my own thing and trying to make it unique and trying to make it memorable.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sometimes it's a hit, sometimes it's a miss, and the little formula that I've got right now, I'm very happy with what I'm doing, and I'm hoping things continue, and let's hope going into Shrediversary, let's hope it continues in a big, good way.
Absolutely. And tell our listeners about YouTube and the importance of that, and I'm assuming because you are very consistent with it, I'm assuming it works for you. It's something that you know, you obviously enjoy doing, but it's got to be part of that whole branding package, if you will, and maybe getting more eyes from fans and promoters on the Bo Sawyer brand, so to speak.
Yeah, pretty much. With YouTube, I mean, it can be a great tool, and it can be one of those, oh no, I ended up on this page. You know, there's, let's face it, Botchmania is a thing out there.
Sure.
Luckily, I have never seen myself on Botchmania. I'm very happy to keep that streak going.
Yeah.
But, you know, when it comes to the Midwest Monster Hunters, and I actually run my YouTube page is under the American War Dog, Bo Sawyer.
Uh-huh.
And he used to, let's put it this way, at least once, if not twice a week, you've got Hunting and Bumping, which is, let's face it, we're goofy, we're nerdy, you know, we throw a lot of nerd references in there, anywhere from comic books to any kind of pop culture type stuff or movies. It's more of a fun thing. Let's say we have the Rock, Paper, Scissors Heavyweight Championship of the World, which Stride Zone Zoe Moore, a.k.a. Rainbow Bright, just won the Rock, Paper, Scissors Championship.
Nice.
So that's kind of a weird little spin to it, but we have fun with that. There's also, and you've been I could say a guest star of it multiple times. We've got Between the Ditches. My boy Jim Bosco, who's a staple, who, if you don't know who Jim Bosco is, that is the music man for Stride, and he is on every episode of Between the Ditches, and he will continue to be on every episode, because Jim Bosco is the man. And it's just it's a fun little adventure type stuff, but at the same time, it gives you a chance to see a lot of the different side of what you don't see in the ring. Mm-hmm. Like, when, especially on the singles run, especially that I'm currently on, it's more I try to battle up to more of the aggressive side. So, yeah, you might see a little bit of smiles, but let's face it, when I'm chopping or if I'm power slamming somebody, I'm kind of happy.
Yeah.
But on the other side, the flip of it, when you see after the bell or between the bell, before the bell, that we're kind of being goofy, we're kicking backs, letting the nerves go and everything, and just being goofy and being ourselves. That's a different little aspect that you don't get to see in the ring. And it's just, it's more of a fun thing. And plus, you never know who's looking. I mean, I've had different messages from different people asking about things.
Mm-hmm.
And some good, some really weird. But for the most part, it's very positive feedback. And it's a fun thing. And it gets yourself out there and it keeps yourself relevant, keeps yourself current, and especially I'm up to over 150 some subscribers, and I've got people that'll message me, and especially through the Midwest Monster Hunters Facebook page, which is still a thing.
Mm-hmm.
People will message and be like, hey, it was a funny episode, or hey, have you thought about doing this, or is the Chupacabra a real thing? And then you kind of go off from there. But it keeps you relevant, keeps you in people's, what am I trying to say here?
You're on the radar. Yeah.
It keeps you relevant. It keeps you going. And it's, to me, I never thought it would be something that I would like to do, but it turns out I actually really like to do it.
Yeah. They're well put together, well edited episodes. So be sure to check it out. I have the link in the write up of this week's episode. So check it out. But let's talk about our main event here, so to speak. And I was very fascinated to find out because, and this is why I wanted to do the podcast with you, my all-time favorite tag team is the British Bulldogs. And your all-time favorite wrestler is the British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith. We've got to talk about this. So,
we have to, yes.
I'm going to guess I'm about a decade older than you. And I'm going to guess I'm probably about a decade ahead of you in terms of watching. When did you start watching pro wrestling? What is your first memories? And you don't have to be very specific, but what era were you kind of starting to watch?
It had to be early 80s or late 80s, early 90s, because I remember being, age-wise, I'm not even going to try to throw it out there and remember, but I remember my mom had a VHS camcorder and was recording something, and it was like, I remember the two promos were Boss Man and Ultimate Warrior, and just going off, and let's face it, Warrior in his promos, back then, he was just yelling, and he was going off, and all these things. I was hyped, and I didn't care, and years later, I look and be like, what the hell is he really talking about?
Exactly.
But at the same time, it just captivated me so much. And, being at that young age and that golden era, in my opinion, of bringing it up and, the guys that were larger than life, colorful and just, flashy, not in the sense of today's flash as in like 450s and super kicks and all that noise, but like flashy as far as like maybe their entrance, as far as, like Macho Man, you could not notice him in that WWF run, come out with the big, it wasn't even a robe. What would you call it? A cape?
Yeah, a cape. I think that's a good word.
I mean, the cape, the glass, the bandana, I mean, the whole nine. Over the top, it had me hooked.
So was Davey Boy, when you started watching, was Davey Boy still with Dynamite Kid as the British Bulldogs, or had they already left WWF and split and he's on his return? I know he came back in 1990.
Right, yeah, I was catching it in, you know, like early 90s when he'd come back, when it was just him on his own road.
Okay.
And I was just so blown away, like, the way he was put together. You know, Bulldog was a powerhouse.
Oh, yeah.
And let's put it this way, he was 5'11 and 260.
Yeah.
And, but what blew my mind, you know, here's this guy who, in my opinion, he looks jacked. He was huge, you know, more huge.
Built like a brick shit house, as they say.
Yeah, very much so. But he could move.
Yeah.
And it blew my mind. I'm like, no, wait a minute. How can he be that strong and that big and do all these power slams and, you know, stalling vertical suplexes and all this, but he can hang with, like, little guys?
Yeah.
And, you know, like, we consider little guys, especially back in that range, of, like, you know what, 225?
Right, yeah.
But, and it just blew my mind. I'm like, he was so strong, but he was so fast and agile, and he could, like, do the, was it, like, the little handspring and, like, nip up and everything? It, like, blew my mind.
Yeah, I think, when, you know, like I said, I started watching in like late 82, early 83. Bulldogs didn't really come on my radar until 84-ish when they showed up in the WWF. Of course, their classic feuds with like the Hart Foundation and Greg Valentine and Brutus Beefcake winning the tag team titles at WrestleMania 2. The thing I always found intriguing about the Bulldogs is, for me, and again, this was my experience, my bubble of sorts, this was the first time I can remember a tag team where one guy used another guy as a weapon. I can remember Bulldog, or Davey Boy, kind of pressing Dynamite and launching him and then into that, you know, diving headbutt, or what, you know, whatever the case may be. They were kind of using each other as weapons as well as partners. So I was just fascinated with them. And then, of course, you know, still being a kid, you add the element of Matilda, their mascot of sorts, and
right.
I just loved this team. And when they left the WWF in late 88, I was disappointed. But when and I know they went off and did Stampede and actually split and had a feud, and I would have loved to have seen televised matches of this feud, but I never did. But then when Davey Boy came back to the WWF in the mainstream in 1990, dramatically different. I mean, he was obviously, as we mentioned, you know, had this power physique in as the tag team, but when he came back in 90, he was jacked, had the long braids, you know, had a different look, still kind of dressed the same, but was obviously, you know, part of that flash that you talked about with Macho Man. You know, he had he'd wear the coat sometimes, and of course had Winston now instead of Matilda, but still just could get in there and perform, but had that physique as well. And, you know, while he wasn't my favorite, he was definitely one of those guys that I really enjoyed watching and feuding with guys like Mr. Perfect, thinking he was going to win the Intercontinental title at one point, and he eventually did. But tell me a little bit about, you know, watching him then as a singles guy. What was it? What was that thing that kind of clicked with you that you were like, okay, this is my guy?
Pretty much, you know, kind of going back to as far as like, I've always been, in the wrestling sense, attracted to the bigger guys who could, you know, the big power moves, you know. Like, obviously, like, you had Hogan, you had Warrior, you had, even all, even put Boss Man in there. They were just the big guys that could do the things. But with Davey Boy, when he would do, like, when he would press somebody, and you'd always look, to me, I always looked at the face, looked at the eyes, and it looked just effortless.
Yeah.
And then he kind of had, like, that cheesy little smile, you know, too. And just, it's like, you know, I know I'm strong, but I'm going to show you how strong I can be.
Yeah.
Especially like when he had his little feud with the Warlord, which was one of my favorite feuds with him.
Yeah.
Because you had power on power, and you know, it's that immovable force, or irresistible force, immovable object.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just blew my mind where, you know, Davey, it's like, could he rely on the power? Yeah, but at the same time, he had to be agile. He had to get around Warlord. He had to move. And it just blew my mind. Like, a guy out of the Warlord that was probably, what, 330?
Yeah.
I mean, just a, like, Davey Boy was a brick in himself.
But yeah.
If he was a brick, then, you know, the Warlord was a friggin' mountain.
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know, doing the things that he did with him and just the easy psychology to it. And just, I was like, okay, I don't care. This is my guy. And then, you know, then to see him move on to work with, you know, like Owen and Shawn and guys who were, like, you know, no doubt technical, like, wizards in a way that, you know, you know, anytime you've seen their technicians, you know that you've seen these guys work with other people and the way they manipulated and manhandled them just by their technical prowess. And then you've seen Davey Boy come in and put that technical spin on it, but also with the power. It blew my mind.
Yeah. And
I was like, wow.
His vertical suplex, I mean, you know, holding, you know, the way he used to hold the guys there and then just drop with them. I mean, phenomenal feats of strength. And you mentioned Owen Hart specifically. You know, one of my other favorite tag teams of all time was the combination of Davey Boy and Owen Hart. And I can remember going to a house show and seeing them in action in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, when I was in college still. And they were the tag team champions. And just, you know, and I was fortunate enough to see the Bulldogs. They wrestled singles the night I saw them in action, but they wrestled Valentine and Beefcake in singles competition. And of course, each guy, you know, a man from each team ended up winning. But just that presence, you know, inside the ring, you know, the strength that he had, just such a memorable character, if that's the word I'm looking for, in you know, the late 80s, the early 90s, but then even into that Attitude Era, and going on and winning the European Championship. Of course, we mentioned the Intercontinental title that he beat Bret Hart for at Wembley Stadium. That was such a huge match and so significant, such a big milestone
in his career. 80,000 people. It was ridiculous.
And I was legit pissed, even though Shawn Michaels ended up becoming obviously who Shawn Michaels became, but when Davey Boy dropped the title to Shawn Michaels on Saturday night's main event, I was so disappointed because I really wanted Davey Boy to have a decent run with it. And, you know, here comes Shawn Michaels. And again, we talk about that smaller guy versus the bigger guy. And Davey Boy, much like yourself, I mean, you get in there and you can do the things that dictate a small, you know, that might dictate a smaller opponent and guys that are just as big as you. I, you know, I've seen you in there with Jason Tiller or, you know, someone like maybe Roger Mathis or when you guys jumped in there with Abyss. I mean, you've been in there and mixed it up with those big guys, but you get in there as well and you fight the smaller guys as well. And this is, I'm trying to ask this without it sounding weird, but I feel like your body type is reminiscent of Davey Boy Smith. Do you look at him not only as that inspiration as a wrestler in kind of formatting some of those power moves, but your workout regimen, does it kind of reflect that more of a power look that you're going for?
I would definitely say more yes. I do still try to maintain it to where I can do the power stuff. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like right now, you got to think, I'm representing Stride's No Limits division. And whether, you know, whether it's a division or it's a, you know, a group of, you would think, more smaller athletes, very much like a Dexter Roswell.
Yeah.
Dexter's unpredictable. He may not be the guy that's the biggest, flashiest high flyer or anything, but he has a big box of tricks that he can pull out.
Sure.
And at the same time, I've got to be on my toes, so I can't just solely rely on the power. You know, I have to be able to move. I have to be able to do some stuff. And you know, I got a feeling that I'm going to pull out some stuff out of the Bo Sawyer toolbox that maybe people haven't seen or seen for a minute. And I'm gonna keep myself on my toes, but you better believe I'm actually gonna keep Dexter off his feet and on his back.
Absolutely. Well, Davey Boy Smith obviously bounces around. You know, he loses the Intercontinental Championship, as we mentioned, in late 1992. Shows up in WCW, wrestled Vader. And, you know, again, we talk about those big guys. Vader, one of the best when it comes to that big guy. Not even take out the big guy equation, but one of the best, you know, of all time. Multiple time WCW champion. I legit thought, again, you know, Davey Boy's going to come over here and he's going to win the big gold in WCW.
I did too. I had those hopes. I thought it was going to happen.
So, you know, obviously you're following him around as he's, you know, again, bouncing around and then back in the WWF in 1994, he shows up to second Bret Hart in his feud against Owen Hart and Jim Neidhart. And then eventually the Hart Foundation is reborn and we throw Brian Pillman into the mix along with Davey. So what incarnation of Bulldog is your favorite? You know, did you like the singles guy in the early 90s? Was it more of the WCW run, or now back, you know, we're late 90s and it's the Hart Foundation, and you know, he's obviously cut his hair. He's changed his look with, you know, he's wearing the short tights instead of the long tights, kind of bouncing back and forth with that look. But, you know, he's a heel now. He's a bad guy. Did you buy into the Bulldog as a bad guy?
Then when it comes down to it, I mean, you know, I did very much enjoy the Hart Foundation when he came back in that later run with it. It just showed more of the, you know, when you looked at the early 90s Bulldog, who I will openly admit that is probably my favorite Bulldog. Uh-huh. But when it comes down to it, you saw the, he's not always, you know, always smiles and everything. And he can get down and get through the dirty stuff and, you know, shows that he's stuck with his family. And that was one thing that I always, like, whether people liked the Hart Foundation or they didn't, it was a family thing.
Right.
And I liked it because they stuck with it. They didn't, yeah, they brought Pillman in, but you got to think, it's not just they brought him in because, let's say, they didn't have anything for him. You know, he earned a spot to be in there, at least.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I liked it because it was showing he was multi, you know, it wasn't just like a one-dimensional type of wrestler. And, you know, he could get in there, do the dirty stuff, do the heel stuff, and it just, to me, like, I think it worked out pretty well.
Well, we, you know, the Hart Foundation, the group, was kind of short for this world. Of course, unfortunately, Brian Pillman dies in October of 97.
Right.
I was actually at the show in St. Louis when they announced it, although we didn't hear that over the public announce system, obviously. They just gave that information to the pay-per-view crowd. This is in the era before smartphones, so none of us knew why Brian Pillman wasn't there. That night, of course, the British Bulldog and Bret Hart team up against Vader and the Patriot in that flag match, and that really leads us then into the Montreal Screwjob, where British Bulldog joins Bret Hart and Jim Neidhart in leaving the WWF for WCW. Now, this last WCW run for Bulldog is less than glamorous. He gets hurt. He's kind of saddled in this tag team with Neidhart, and they don't really do a whole lot with him.
No, they really didn't.
Yeah, and I guess it's understandable because it was such a sea of, and this is, of course, the height of the Monday Night Wars, or Monday Night War, and there's so much talent there already, and you know, Davey Boy kind of gets overlooked. Then in 1999, we tragically lose Owen Hart in that accident, and later that year, Bulldog resurfaces in the WWF, and I think that probably one of the biggest surprises for me as a fan of somebody coming back from WCW to the WWF, just because of everything that went down with Bret. Now Owen has died, and here is a Hart family member because, you know, as we all know, Davey Boy was married to Diana Smith, or Diana Hart, who was Bret's sister. So, you know, he's kind of crossed enemy lines once again and is back in the WWF. And, of course, this run, less than stellar. He feuds with The Rock. He ends up with the Mean Street Posse as a tag team. I think there's a small feud with Val Venus, but less than stellar. His look has changed once again. What'd you think of his last run in the WWF, and were you surprised to see him back?
I mean, I was glad to see him back in, you know, in WWF. Mm-hmm. It was a different Bulldog. It was kind of, to me, it was almost, I mean, it was more of the heel Bulldog and everything, so kind of almost continuing off of that, the Hart Foundation kind of look in a way.
Yeah.
And maybe like that same attitude. And although it wasn't my favorite run, I was very much happy to see him back in WWF because he didn't have anything in WCW. Like you said, you know, he tagged with Jim over there, and it just, there wasn't really anything, unfortunately. But, you know, when he came back, it was a different Bulldog, you know, in a way, but you know, it was good to see that's where he ended up to come back. And, you know, as much as I hate to say it, one of the most memorable things was the, what was it, the sliding people's elbow?
Yeah, yeah.
With the, I can't remember this specifically if it was the same one or not, but wasn't he laying on dog poop?
That
was that a different one?
It was, yes, that was the, I believe it was like a dog food match or something, and then they brought in dog poop. Yeah, it turned into this.
Yeah,
it was him and The Rock, and it was kind of
that silliness, if you will, which, you know, obviously wrestling is known for some of that stuff, but it was kind of an unceremonious end to his run. I felt like, you know, he obviously leaves the company in like 2000, and then less than 2 years later has a heart attack and dies, and he's 39 years old.
Yeah, 39 years old.
Huge shock to me.
Yeah, I mean, so young. I mean, like, I can openly say I'm 37.
Yeah.
And, you know, I look at that and I'm just like, wow, he was only 39. And, I mean, he still had so much to offer.
Yeah.
I mean, but just, wow, just completely blew my mind. Like, I will openly admit there have been, like, two times when wrestlers have passed that, I'll admit, I cried.
Yeah.
One obviously was Bulldog and the other was Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah.
And I remember I was in Iowa when Eddie passed away, and like I bawled, and like I had a roommate, and they were like, "What's going on with you?" And I'm like, "Dude, Eddie Guerrero just passed away. Have some respect, you jerk." You know?
Yeah.
It was just one of those things that, like, those are the two wrestlers that when they passed, I like it really, really hit me.
Yeah.
So it was just like, and you know, Eddie had a, you know, great run with all his stuff, but you know, he at least got that length and everything, and had, you know, a pretty good life to it. But, you know, with Davey Boy only being 39, I was like, you got to be kidding me. And just, it broke me.
Yeah, and I believe Eddie was 38 or 39. So they're both around the same age, and they both died of heart-related issues, which, you know, some have said were maybe enhanced or made worsened by some of the things they did outside of the ring. And obviously, right. Bulldog, you know, we're here to honor and respect the Bulldog, and this is not a judgment by any means, but when he got injured in WCW, and I know that he had, you know, recreationally used drugs in the past, but, you know, there are reports that he had gotten hooked on painkillers after that serious back injury that almost ended his career. You know, I think that obviously had an impact on him when he came back to the WWF, and that kind of that different look, and obviously slowing down, and because we mentioned he was 39. He was such a young man at the time of his death. So it was hard to see that happen with him and kind of the things go down the way they did. Obviously, a huge legacy, though, in the history of professional wrestling. And there are rumors, a buzz going around right now. And this is kind of why I wanted to do the topic today or this week, is that he may be Hall of Fame bound. And obviously, I think you and I agree, this is an honor that is way long overdue.
Oh, very, very, very much so. I've actually had been fortunate enough on Twitter to talk back and forth with his son, Harry.
Yeah.
And I had said something about it, and he had said thanks. So I don't know if anybody's, like, actually reached out to, like, Harry or Diana or the family or anything to, you know, either confirm or be like, hey, would you guys be all right that if we put Davey Boy in the Hall of Fame? So, you know, it's been circulating around for quite a while. Like, there's on Facebook, there's been a petition going on for like the last actually couple of years, yeah. I think, to get Davey Boy into the Hall. And, you know, just what, like a month or better, you know, we've been hearing rumors that finally breaking that there's a good possibility that he's going in. And I very, very much deserve, because, you know, in my opinion, he's the greatest wrestler of all time not to be world champion.
Yeah.
Second with, like, him and maybe Kurt Hennig.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, very much deserves the Hall. I mean, no doubt.
Well, and you mentioned Harry Smith, which I wanted to talk about him for a minute as well, because, you know, everything that Bulldog accomplished in the ring, perhaps his greatest legacy is going to be Harry Smith, who I think is probably a short list of guys who is not with a major company. By major company, I'm going to say AEW or WWE at this point. Obviously had that short run with Tyson Kidd as the Hart Dynasty. Huge underrated tag team, in my opinion. Those guys, I think, you know, I don't know what all the behind the scenes was with it, but I would have loved to have seen a lot more out of that combination, and then eventually the split or the singles run for Harry Smith. And I there's obviously still time, and I think Harry Smith would definitely come in and do his father's legacy well and represent the Hart family as well as the Smith family being that third generation guy who could be up there in competition with some of the all-time greats on either AEW's roster or WWE's.
Yeah, very much. You got to think Harry now, you know, especially because he left WWE in, God, I'm not even going to try to think what year it actually was.
I think it must have been like 11 or 12. I mean, I remember being at WrestleMania in Phoenix, and that was in 2010, and that was when Bret Hart came back and wrestled Vince McMahon, and that was, I think, the night before they won the tag team, before Harry and TJ won the tag team title. So that, I feel like it wasn't long after they lost to the Usos they ended up losing to Drew McIntyre and Cody Rhodes, a mishmash of a team, I thought, but, it wasn't long after they lost, I feel like, that Davey Boy Jr. or Harry Smith kind of disappeared from the scene. And he's really gone on to kind of, like we mentioned with you, kind of that brand building. He's kind of gone on to build his brand. And obviously, you know, you have that lineage of the Hart family and his own father. So you want to capitalize on that. But I feel like he's done a good job, too, of establishing himself as his own man, much like Brian Pillman Jr. is doing.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, you got to think, you know, when Harry left WWE, it's not like he just, you know, went home and sat on the couch and didn't do anything.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy's a worker. I mean, he is very, very much a grappler. Very much. I don't know if I want to say like the MMA route.
Right.
But in a way, rolls like several times a week. And I mean, this guy is busy. He's still huge. And the one thing that always killed me about Harry compared to his dad, you know, Davey Boy was 5'11". Harry's 6'6". I'm like, where the hell did that come from?
So yeah, he's a hoss.
My mind and be like, wait a minute. But I mean, the guy's constantly busy. A lot of Japan stuff, which I think that has helped him tremendously. I'm not saying he wasn't a good athlete, couldn't do anything, but the knowledge that he's learned and the experience that he's gained from being over there, and especially tagging with like Lance Archer, you know, we're there with the Killer Elite Squad. You know, they had one hell of a run. Had a great. I don't know if they just had one match or if they had a little series match of matches with War Machine back then, obviously the Viking Raiders now.
Yeah.
And just had, you know, great tag team wrestler, but let's put it this way. On his own, the guy is no slouch. He can go out there and hang with, I mean, anybody, just like his dad.
Very parallel to his dad, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He's got that power, but he can use not only the speed, just quickness-wise, but like mat ability. I mean, he can go with anybody. There was a Josh Barnett's Bloodsport. He had a match with Killer Cross, and oh my God, if you haven't seen that, please take a look. Yeah. It is absolutely amazing.
Well, and you know, Davey Boy kind of, you know, very similarly wrestled in Japan. He wrestled in Canada, obviously, where he got his start. Came here and wrestled in WWF, WCW. You know, he was a major player for so long, for more than a decade, and you know, kind of got that experience and that seasoning. And I think, you know, I almost feel like Harry's in the driver's seat and could go where he wants to go and is kind of controlling his own destiny. Is it fair to say Bo Sawyer would like to get into the ring, the American War Dog versus Davey Boy Smith Jr., Harry Smith, sometime down the road? Would you love that?
Oh, without a doubt. I would absolutely. Just the nostalgia and the fact that, you know, here's my favorite wrestler of all time, his son. I would absolutely love the opportunity to get in and mix it up with Harry. Like, let's put it this way. The guy's a beast on a mat, and, you know, it's been a while since I've had my MMA day. You know, let's see, back in Iowa in 2005. But, hey, I'm still not a little guy. I'm still not a slouch, and I can still move. And might get it handed to me, but you know what? I'm going to have a smile on my face the entire time if it happens.
Well, Bo Sawyer, one of the biggest, baddest dudes on the roster in Stride Pro Wrestling. As we wrap things up, give yourself some plugs here. How can folks find you on social media, connect with you, and again, the YouTube channel, I have it linked to the write-up for this week's episode, but how can fans or promoters, or if he's listening, Davey Boy Smith Jr., get a hold of you?
Yeah, definitely, very much so. I might talk to him here on Twitter in a little bit. But people can catch me on Facebook, as everybody is on Facebook. It's just under Bo Sawyer. You can catch me on Twitter at BoSmashU, and it's just a letter U. You can, like Kevin was talking about, you can follow the weekly, bi-weekly, sometimes twice weekly adventures and goofiness and the shenanigans on hunting and bumping between the ditches and the other random stuff on the YouTube channel under the American War Dog, Bo Sawyer.
Alrighty, and again, you can come see Bo in action this Saturday night. It is March 14th, Strideiversary, the four-year anniversary of Stride Pro Wrestling. He is the reigning defending No Limits champion, meeting Dexter Roswell at the Saline County Fairgrounds. That's in Harrisburg, Illinois. Check StridePROWrestling.com for the very latest. Fans, friends, listeners, thanks for being a part of this week's episode. Join us next week. It is Wrestling Under the Influence, and we will be back with more. Stay tuned to My 123 Cents for the latest. Thanks, everyone, for being a part.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.